Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 175 of Nerd Pride Radio. 175, paragraph 175, a provision of the German criminal code that made homosexual acts between males a crime. Even though it was instituted in 1871, it was used by the Nazis to persecute gays during the Third Reich. There is also a documentary from the year 2000, also called paragraph 175, about this exact topic. So, well, that's bringing it down, isn't it? Enough of that. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me.
How are you doing today?
I am awesome, thank you, Noah. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet, that's right. Nerd Pride smells exactly like a freshly opened Monster Java Kona blend. Oh, how I miss it. Okay, now we're going to get to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And straight into my master list, I'm actually not going to do any real segments today. I thought about making this a fingertips episode, but I'm not going to. Look, it has been a long week. It's been a long month, hasn't it? I mean, this is... I have a lot of existential angst just from following the news and my Facebook feed, and so I'd like to put all that out of my mind right now. There won't be any uncomfortable topics during this episode. I just feel like chatting. So I've got a list of stuff that I just found interesting this week, and then we'll get into a slew of podomatics and use up some of this goodness that you guys have been sending to me. So to start off, my son Jacob, you know he has a hedgehog named Miles. And as it turns out, the city he lives in, it is illegal to own exotic pets without first getting permission from the city council. And he knows this because his boss happens to be on the city council. And so they were driving somewhere, for something. And his boss says, he mentioned something about Miles, his hedgehog. And his boss is like, whoa, you realize you're not allowed to, technically, not allowed to own that within the city limits without blah, 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 blah. And yeah, the understanding is, you know, lots of people do it and they kind of get away with it. But the trick is, you know, yeah, it's not really that big a deal. But if somebody does complain, well, then they're going to take your pet away or tell you you got to get rid of it. And so Jacob, being as conscientious as he is extremely worried that something might happen to his hedgehog. He would hate for the wrong person to say the wrong thing, and then his hedgehog gets taken away from him and hauled off to the gas chamber or whatever it is they do with hedgehogs. And so he actually went through the whole process of filling out the paperwork, going before the city council. They had to mail out letters to all of his neighbors, check with his landlord to make sure that it was okay. I mean, all sorts of stuff went on. And then he goes before the city council and answers a few of their questions. And they told him to be there at 5:30. He was like the third item on the agenda. And by 5:38, he's giving me a call going, well, that was it. I guess Miles is official now. But it was just an interesting process. And, my favorite part of it Like, so what questions did they ask? Are you okay, Noah?
Yes.
Okay. Noah's the only one in the family that didn't get a flu shot and also the only one who got the flu. So, I don't know if that...
No, Mom got the flu as well.
As long as
probably
either. No, hold on. He's over there. You guys can't hear him because he's not on the mic. By the way, your Uncle Kyle says, get on the mic or shut the hell up. Okay? He's over there claiming that Mom also had the flu and that his brother, well, but different because see, yeah, we've all been sick with colds and stuff off and on, but he's the only one that actually had to be out for 5 days because he was that miserable. He's the one who ran a fever for 4 straight days. You. Yeah, I'm blaming you.
5, including Saturday.
That's true. See, so technically he woke up in the middle of the night on Saturday with a fever. So, anyway. I think he's the one who had the real flu. The rest of us are just a bunch of fakers. So, that's not my point. What was my point? Oh, you were coughing. That's right. And then you interrupted me. Anyway, I was talking about Jacob and Miles. And, Jacob said, cause I asked, what questions did they ask you? Cause obviously they want to know. And he said, really, it was, so is it a rodent or what? And he had to explain that it wasn't a rodent, and sure enough, they all looked it up in their phones. Oh, hey, how about that? It's not even a rodent. It's related to shrews. What, shrews aren't rodents? Okay. And then, also, the other question was, you didn't bring him with you? Oh, we wanted to see a hedgehog. So, I think he's gonna find out when their next meeting is and then bring Miles around to say thank you, because they were very cool. So, anyway, there you go. Miles the Hedgehog is now completely legal, and there's nothing to worry about. I know you guys were on the edge of your seats, but now we can all rest easy. Also, as long as I'm talking about my son Jacob, who is, what is he now, 22 this year. My 22-year-old son just called me the other day out of nowhere, and he says, oh my God, you've got to help me. I don't know what's going on. He says, I don't remember ever studying this. I don't remember even really paying attention to a list. I don't know where this came from. How do I know all of the presidents in order? How is that possible? And my immediate response is, well, from the song. And he goes, what song are you talking about? So Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, that song? And he's like, that sounds vaguely familiar. When did I learn that song? I said, in second grade, because that's when I learned that song, is when you were in second grade, and that's how I know all the presidents in order. He's like, oh, thank God. He said, I thought I was going crazy. And, I mean, honestly, to his point of view, you know that scene in a movie when the sleeper agent or the person with amnesia or whatever it is, and suddenly they're like, oh my God, how do I know jujitsu? Wait, when did I learn to speak French? Holy cow, why do I know that? That's what he was having. He was having that moment. He was suddenly Jason Bourne trying to figure out why, well, it was okay if Jason Bourne's main talent was knowing all the presidents in order. But still, you get the idea that to him, it's like all of a sudden, something he's never bothered to think about in his life, learned it, 15 years ago, never bothered to think about it, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he realizes, why do I know that? I thought it was a very funny story. So, and he still doesn't remember the song, but it apparently worked for him. It sunk in. Hey, did I tell you guys that we were going to go see Chicago the Musical? I think I did tell you. And we went out a couple days ago, and there was going to be a blizzard. There was a blizzard. And fortunately, we got there just ahead of the blizzard. Like, the snow is coming down, the roads are starting to get bad, and as long as we kept moving east, things didn't get any worse. Every time we had to turn and the road turned north, things would get steadily worse until we turned east again. And then they'd hold steady, and we made it there in time. And fortunately, we were never in any danger. The roads were good enough that, we just drove slow. We went like 30, 40 miles an hour the whole way. And we got to the theater, and we got to see Chicago. And holy cow, if you guys have you seen Chicago the Musical? Have you seen it performed? The actual production, because I saw the movie and I loved the movie. I thought the movie Chicago was awesome. We fell in love with it. We bought the soundtrack, and I am here to tell you that the theater production of Chicago the Musical is so much better than that. so much better. I mean, as much as I love the movie, I don't know that I can watch the movie now because it's just not as good. It was, all right. Also, look, it's me and Lisa and we are sitting main floor center, two rows back from the stage. So we are right there and we can see every detail, every nuance, every little tremor, every expression, everything. And it was so gorgeous. It was so cool. First off, I didn't realize that the entire play, that the dark burlesque kind of lingerie that they're wearing in some of the scenes of the movie. No, that's their entire costume for the entire thing. The entire production, the whole cast is done up like that, except for a couple of specific characters who have other roles. But the whole cast is done up in this lingerie, and that's what they perform in the entire thing. There's no change of costumes. There's no nothing. And there's no set. It is this huge bandstand occupies 80% of the stage, and there's a 13-piece orchestra, band, whatever it is, but 13 musicians up there with a conductor, and they're performing throughout the musical, and the actors are working kind of in front of them and maybe a little bit around to the sides, and that's it. They have maybe a dozen chairs that get brought out at different times. They have, you know, a couple of minor props like the gun or these feathered fans or a couple little things. And then that's it. Very minimalist. And it was captivating and it was funny and it was entertaining. The dancing, the singing, it was gorgeous. We had so much fun. And it was, if you've seen the movie, but not the play or not the stage performance of it, it was, I mean, it's essentially the same story as the movie with, there's a couple extra numbers, a couple extra details thrown in, but it was way more playful. It was just way more fun. And I just can't tell you. I mean, we sat there and by maybe a third of the way through, I mean, we hadn't even gotten to intermission yet. And Lisa looks over and goes, "Oh my God, my jaw hurts from smiling so much." I'm like, "I know." The whole thing just made me so happy. It was really good. So we had a great time watching that. So if you have a chance to see Chicago the Musical and you haven't yet, I highly recommend it. It was really fun, really good. So there you go. I told you, just minor stuff. We're just going to run through this quick. Also speaking of Jacob, I completely forgot about this one. Jacob was, he runs events for his college. He works for the computer department, so he does tech support, and he is the guy who is in charge of coordinating the tech support for events that go on. So making sure that the football games get broadcast on TV, making sure that they have solid video and audio recordings for everything that needs to be, you know, saved, archived, broadcast, whatever. And this one, he was just so annoyed that he had to work because it was going on really late and he was going to have to work super late, and that's unusual for him. And he was just annoyed with it. And it turns out it was for something with Dick Cavett, of all people. And he was just floored. Just, he said, the guy is spellbinding, even at his age, just a master of the spoken word. And I said, yeah, that's Dick Cavett. Cause I look, Dick Cavett is even before my time. I remember Dick Cavett being on TV when I was a kid, but you know, it was Dick Cavett. I wasn't, when I was, you know, 6 years old, I'm not paying attention to Dick Cavett on TV. I knew who he was. I recognized him. I knew he had a show, a talk show. I knew that, you know, but that's it. I was a kid. I wasn't paying attention to it. But I did get to see him. He was actually the first, honored guest at the very first, Great American Comedy Festival, which is held right here in our little town. And he was the first honoree at the Great American Comedy Fest. And I got to see him that night. He came out and he talked for a long time, and it was just, the guy is, he's mesmerizing. And if you go back and you watch some of his stuff, 'cause you can find a lot of his work on YouTube even, and go back and watch some of his interviews. Jacob turned me on to his interview with Salvador Dali, which was just phenomenal. But it was, Dick Cavett was the interviewer. He was the guy who knew how to give an interview. And modern interviewers all look up to him as an idol, all look back and say, yeah, Dick Cavett, that's the guy. That's That's who you want to be like. And who do we have? Who do we have today that is that good at the art of the interview? You want to talk about a lost art? Nowadays, when the vast majority of interview work that you see is talk shows, it's late night TV, it's daytime talk shows, it's celebrities who are coming on with a specific thing to plug, and they have, you know, anywhere from, you know, 3 to 15 minutes with the host, and it winds up most of the time being, you know, they come out and, hey, let's talk about this project that we're working on, and, oh yeah, in our pre-interview, we came up with these 2 or 3 talking point bits where you get to tell a really cute anecdote that makes you relatable to your audience and does good PR for you and this kind of stuff. And it's all really manufactured. I mean, it's really artificial. Almost every interview we see, even, you know, even with hosts and guests that I really like a lot, it's all still so scripted and so formulaic. And Dick Cavett was so much better than that. And nowadays, I think, Howard Stern. I mean, I've heard Howard Stern do interviews and the man is good. I don't like Howard Stern personally. I think, I've mentioned this before. Stern is just so negative. He is such a downer. He is personally such a pessimistic, negative personality that over the long term, listening to him brings me down. As much as I can enjoy the content of what he's doing, it's just depressing. It's too much after a while. But man, Stern knows how to give an interview and he knows how to really get stuff out of people. And another one that does that is Marc Maron. I had to stop listening to Marc Maron eventually for the same kinds of reasons. One, Marc Maron does 2 shows a week and, you know, it's a long form interview. And so sometimes it's people that I like, but if it's someone that I don't know that well or I'm not that interested in, you know, after an hour, I realized that I was listening to these and sometimes they were entertaining and sometimes they, you know, weren't so much, but that's a lot of time for something that I'm only marginally interested in. And also Maron, a lot like Stern, has a really, really pessimistic view on life. And, you know, he's kind of changed a little bit, but it's just, I don't know. It's hard after a long time. And when he opens up every show with, you know, 20, 30 minutes of talking about his personal life, and it's usually really downer stuff. Anyway, that's just me. But who else does real quality interviews? I was trying to think about that before I started recording. And I mean, I got Stern, I got Maron. I listened to Chris Hardwick do his stuff on The Nerdist, but his isn't even an interview. His is just, with Hardwick, it's just having a conversation. Because he's not interviewing. He's not trying to get anywhere. He's not looking for information. He's not trying to bring anything out of them. He's just literally just sitting down and having a conversation that's fun. And because he is a great conversationalist, he connects so well with his guests most of the time that you wind up getting a really good show out of it. They talk about really interesting topics and it can range from, you know, personal anecdotes to, you know, philosophy and just viewpoints on life and that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't call what Hardwick does interviewing necessarily, because he doesn't. So I don't know if he falls in that same thing. But who else is out there? You guys, let me know. I mean, seriously, somewhere, let me know who you think is the great interviewers of our day. Because I guess maybe I don't have that much experience with it. But again, Dick Cavett was just phenomenal. If you're not familiar with Dick Cavett's work, go back and look and see if you can find him doing an interview with somebody that you've heard of, somebody you know that you have an interest in, and interesting guy. Dick Cavett was really good at what he did. So that's all I got. Oh, I got nostalgia. I've been wanting to talk about nostalgia for a long time because nostalgia is big nowadays. We love seeing reminders of things that we loved when we were younger. But nostalgia in that, I don't know. I didn't really prep for this. But for me, nostalgia isn't just a matter of being reminded of something that you used to enjoy. Getting to see a nice mashup t-shirt of, hey, Adventure Time, which I watch now, being mashed up with Back to the Future, which I enjoyed when I was a kid. Is that really nostalgia though? Because people kind of lump all that in as nostalgia. But I was thinking about it because Aiden and I were going somewhere, and I don't even know why we were talking about phone books. But Aiden laughed about the idea of a phone book, and he says, can you give me one good reason to even own a phone book? And I'm like, whoa. I can give you dozens of good reasons to own a phone book. First off, you realize the names and addresses of everybody in town are in there. So if you need to look up somebody's name, there it is. And I went through all this stuff that essentially this is why phone books were useful back before we had smartphones. And finally he realized what I was doing. As I'm starting to list off all the things you can do with your phone book and then finally, I'm like, God, if you need a booster seat for a kid, oh, what's better than a phone book or two? Man, those things are so handy. You know, you can, and finally he goes, okay, whoa. I mean, what use is there for a phone book today? I'm like, oh, none whatsoever. New. Not, I wish they would stop printing them. We don't need them. We have, I said, you know, if you want to get a phone book, you go down to wherever it is that they hand them out and go get one. But God, you know, I'm so glad they don't just come out and throw them on our doorsteps like they used to. What a waste of paper. And he said something about, wow, you know, when I brought this up, I wasn't expecting you to wax all nostalgic about phone books. I'm like, no, that's not nostalgia. I'm reminded of how useful phone books were once upon a day. And the fact that back when it was a monopoly and they didn't need to keep a single traditional look, to maintain their brand, you know, Ma Bell occasionally got creative with the artwork on those things and they were kind of cool and all this, but nostalgia? No, I have no urge to go back to that day. I have no urge to have a phone book in my house. I don't wish that, you know, look, if I need to come up with a booster seat for a kid, I can find things other than phone books, you know? That was what we used because they were handy. But, you know, they're not necessary at all. I don't long for the days of phone books. It's not a, there's no nostalgia about that one. But somebody did, and here's where I have real nostalgia. Somebody brought up, drive-in movies because there's this thing going around Facebook about someone who's planning this new drive-in movie theater with a twist. And the drive-in movie theater is going to be a huge indoor theater with a bunch of classic looking cars all already parked conveniently in front of the screen as if it were a drive-in movie. And so you come into this huge indoor theater with this giant ass screen and then you sit down in a car that they have there for you. And it's like watching a drive-in movie. And I'm like, that seems like a terrible idea to me. So many people were talking about how cool that would be, how nice. Oh, look, I can go to a drive-in movie without the bugs and without, you know, worrying about the weather and without. And I'm like, no, then you're not a drive-in movie. You're just at a regular movie with really weird chairs. That's all you're doing. Because the drive-in movie was not about sitting in a car to watch a movie. I have a drive-in movie, 40 minutes from my house, and we go at least once a year, about once a year, and go watch a drive-in movie, and there's a reason to do it, because it's not about sitting in your car to watch a movie. It's about going to this big outdoor screen, and you get there an hour before the show starts, and you have this whole tailgate experience where you're sitting out in your lawn chairs and the kids are running around and you're throwing frisbees or footballs or they're playing with toys and there's a whole social picnic barbecue experience that goes on beforehand. And then they've got this huge concession stand with this big full grill menu and all the stuff that goes with it. And you're out there on a summer evening and you're watching a double feature so that it doesn't even start until the sun's gone down. The sun has to be down for a good 20, 30 minutes before it's dark enough to start this movie. And then you're out there until 2 a.m. watching films. See, that's an experience. That is a unique experience. And the whole thing, it's all very, very social and interactive. And when that theater is gone, yeah, I'll be nostalgic for that experience because that's a unique experience that you're not going to be able to recreate without building new drive-in theaters, you know? And if they can't make enough money to sustain themselves, there's nothing we can do about it. How much are you willing to pay for that experience? I don't know. I'm just saying that, nostalgia is about a yearning for something that, that you actually want to have back. And so, so for me, like I say, phone books, you know, a lot of the stuff that, that we call nostalgia, it's like, yeah, is that really what you want though? You really want to have that experience back? You want to be doing that again? I mean, the idea of, because I rail against the Cars movie how many times? Cars has this nostalgia for old Route 66, and that's the whole point, is that America seems to have lost something with our super fast highways and our interstate highways, and you know, you've missed the experience of driving lazily along Route 66 and getting that small town experience and getting that, and that, it's garbage. I don't want to go back to that. I don't want to go back to a day where it takes me 50% longer to get anywhere that I'm going because what we want to force people to have to stop along the way, and we want to force people to have it. No, I like the big safe interstate highways where we can go 75, 80 miles an hour and get things where they're going faster. I have no problem with that. I'm not, you know, there's an experience that's being missed, but we're creating new ones too. Anyway, like I said, I've been wanting to talk about nostalgia for a long time, but I've never had anything really coherent about it. And so just this little bit with the phone books and then the drive-ins all coming up in the same week, it's like, all right, there's something I can talk about and I can get nostalgia off my plate. But like I say, I have more to say about it. I just don't know what yet. But that's it. That is all I have for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. And as you've noticed, it wasn't even that meticulously plotted. I just rambled on for a little bit. So now to fill up the rest of the time, you know what we're going to do? We're going to dive into a little Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2, this is him, in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you guys have chipped in mightily. All right, you guys want to hear me talk about something? You send it to me, send me a question or topic by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, and Pod-O-Matic really honestly becomes about whatever you want it to be. This is the whole heart of the Pod-O-Matic is you guys send me questions, and then I just roll a random number on these dice, and we read it off. And you guys, like I say, I thanked you last week. I've gotten more Pod-O-Matic since then. You guys have been spectacular. So let's get right into those, since I got them right here. The first number is 89. And 89 comes from? Let's see. Oh, it's from Kyle. All right, Kyle. Kyle says, have you seen John Wick, the first one? No, dude, I haven't. I haven't, and I want to so bad. I'm working on it right now. Kyle says, it's amazing, and I'm excited to see the sequel. Here's the thing. A coworker of mine saw it on my recommendation and thought it was so bad that the only way I could possibly enjoy it was ironically. What can I do to convince him that I genuinely enjoy this movie? Ooh, that's a good question. And first off, I really want to see John Wick, and I really want to see John Wick 2, and I haven't. And I realize I'm going to make this about me because it's my podcast. I was trying to compile a best of 2016 list, and I realized I haven't seen any movies in 2016. I'm like checking off the list. I'm like, God, I saw maybe 15 movies in 2016, and I need to make a top 10 list out of the 15 movies I've seen. I don't even have enough to get close to a top 3 and be able to think that maybe I've seen enough to qualify to do that. But I haven't, for some reason, the last year or two, well, not for some reason, it's because it's easy. Netflix and Hulu and Amazon have made it really easy for me to be watching TV series. And there's been so much good TV available that I'm not watching. I mean, I'll see movies at the theater that I'm excited about, and then I don't watch movies at home anymore, or at least not often. I just saw The Babadook the other night, though. Man, that was good. Holy cow. But, I mean, how late am I seeing The Babadook? What was that, 2014? Good Lord. I am way behind on stuff. And so, but I really want to see both John Wicks. I'm excited about them. And how to convince somebody that you actually genuinely enjoyed the movie for what it was? You know the answer as well as I do. You just tell them that you did, because honestly, there's no apologies for what you like. And if they want to try and belittle you or mock you for trying to claim that you seriously enjoyed it just straight up as a movie, that's on them. And you know what? That really, it's on them. If they don't want to take your word for it, if they don't want to, then let them judge you. That's what they're going to do. But you know, like what you're going to like. Obviously, that's all I can say about it. 07. So, I'll go all the way up to number 7 on my list, which is from Ronster. All right, Ron. Now that you have a new car, what is your favorite and least favorite thing about it? My favorite thing about my car, I have many favorite things, but my favoritest of my favorite things is the simple fact that it has the whole Bluetooth for my phone. I love getting in and there's my phone. I'm connected. I'm ready to go. If I want to play music, if I want to play podcasts, it's all right there with the nice easy thumb controls on my steering wheel, so I don't have to do anything with my phone. I just go ahead. If I get a call, I answer it. I love that. I love all the heads up stuff here. And I'm sure most of you have already experienced this and know the joys of it. This is awesome for me. This is brand new. That's my favoriteest thing about this thing. I also love that it's clean, that so far at least we're making an effort that every time we get out of the car, we make sure get your garbage out with you. Jesus, can you please clean up those wrappers back there? Can you please? So we're keeping it clean. That's nice. And it also has a huge trunk. I love the huge trunk. So anyway, those are some of my favorite things, but the Bluetooth especially. Now, my least favorite thing about it is the Bluetooth. And let me explain why. When I got the rental was a couple years newer than the one I have now. And the rental just automatically connected and picked up where I left off every single time I got in it, which was so nice. All right. This one, my own car, it's the same system. It's just a couple years older. And so when I get in, I just have to hit a couple of buttons that say, oh yeah, by the way, I'm using my Bluetooth. So I have to go, yeah, go menu, select Bluetooth. There you go. And I just have to do that every time I get in. It's just, you know, a couple of quick button presses and it's done. And now it's so second nature to me that I don't even realize I'm doing it. I just get in, and by the time I've got my seatbelt on, I've already got it all selected and everything's done. But it was a minor annoyance. No, you know what? No, that's not my least favorite thing about this car. Because again, that one I've compensated for. It's not a big deal. My least favorite is it's a narrower front seat than I've had before, specifically because it's got a center console, in between the two front seats, a center console that rises up high enough to be an elbow rest. And I'm not used to having that there under my elbow. And it's not bad driving with it, but it does mean that if I need to get into my pockets to get my wallet out or something, if I'm at a drive through or to, it's kind of awkward pulling things in and out of my pockets while I'm sitting down in there. That's probably my least favorite thing. But you know, that's minor and I'm compensating for it. And you know what? If I want to make that easier, I'll just lose weight, right? Look, drop 100 pounds and suddenly I have no problem in there. So, oh, time to move on. 84 is from, let's see, way down. Oh, there it is. Kyle again. Hey, Kyle. Kyle says, if Superman is the most boring hero, does that make Bizarro Superman the most interesting villain? No. Bizarro Superman, all right, first off, I'm revising my opinion on Superman. I still think he's boring as a concept, but I've seen that he can be made interesting in the right hands. But you know what? Any hero can be made interesting in the right hands. So that doesn't say, it's like, much like any role-playing game, even with the shittiest set of rules, can be an awesome game if you have the right group with it. If you have a good GM and a good supportive group and you're telling an awesome story, who gives a crap what kind of dice you're using or how complicated any of that stuff is? You'll get through all that because the story is awesome. So, yeah, Superman, thank you. God, this is finally summing up Superman for me. This is what I've been wanting to say about him. I think Superman is the equivalent of a bad role-playing game. He's a bad set of tools. He just is just a bunch of bad concepts, but in the right hands, if you're telling the right story, you can make that interesting. You can make anything interesting if you've got a good storyteller, a good group, a good team to put it all together. You can make good out of anything, but you need to have the right people on it. Just like, you know, any other heroes need a good team to make good stories, but, you know, there are some teams and some heroes that are just naturally more interesting, and you can get by and make good stories with them on less talent because they're interesting characters to start with. So having said that, is Bizarro Superman the most interesting villain? No, good Lord. No, he's still stupid. Bizarro Superman is stupid. He's a stupid concept from the beginning, just like a lot of early Superman villains and a lot of early Batman villains, for that matter, are stupid concepts. Just really, really completely illogical, ill thought out. They took I'm going to make the opposite of Superman. So except the opposite of Superman still has Superman's powers, but now he's dumb and he lives on a square planet and he lives on, oh, come on. It's dumb stuff. It was just poorly put together. Although I will tell you, we just saw Lego Batman today and. As Noah is saying over there, hey, get on the mic or shut the hell up. All right. As Noah is saying,
great movie.
Yeah. Lego Batman was really fun. And they did do a huge showcase of really stupid Batman villains. And it was really, this is right early on in the movie. And it was really beautiful. And right now you're asking yourself, yeah, some of those got to be made up, right? Nope. All real. It was really funny.
Some things were references to other things.
Yes.
Like Harry Potter.
Yes. This is one of, that's Noah whispering, and I don't know why he's whispering, but, as Aiden keeps pointing out, one of the joyous things about a Lego movie is they own the rights to everything. So, yeah, is there a Harry Potter reference in this Lego Batman movie? You better believe there is. Is Lord of the Rings in there? Yup. It's the whole list of stuff. And they work it all into the storyline. And it was just a fun movie. It was a lot of fun. So we had a good time. Now, in the end of Kyle's question, I guess I should have read this first, was, okay, is Bizarro Superman the most interesting villain? And thus, should Dos Equis hire him as their spokesperson? No. Bizarro is terrible. He am not the most interesting man in the world. Yuck. In fact, I don't know. I don't know how you could make him more interesting. Ugh, that would be nice, though. Wouldn't it be awesome? Wouldn't it be awesome if Superman's super boring, and yet he's got this villain that is actually fun to read? Wouldn't that be great? That would be the Bizarro comic, is that Superman sucks so bad. But every time Bizarro Superman shows up, suddenly everyone's just fascinated. They're riveted. All right, anyway, enough about boring Superman. 86 comes from Ronster. You guys can just take turns this whole episode. That's fine. Ron says, did you go to a lot of air shows when you were a kid? Yes. What is your favorite memory of them? Yeah, we went to a lot of air shows as a kid. Now, when I say air show, I'm talking about we saw performances by the Blue Angels, the Air Force's official acrobatic aerial team. We saw performances by the Blue Angels many times because they came around once a year. And I say many times, maybe three that I saw them. And I've been to air shows as an adult as well. And my favorite story of an air show, he says, what is your favorite memory of them? It was actually getting to be inside the plane. They would have one out on the tarmac, and we'd all get to go out there, and we'd get to take turns climbing up inside of it and seeing the inside of the plane. And I remember doing that at least once when I was a little kid, and I was just in love with it because my dad flew FB-111s for the Air Force. Well, he navigated them. He had his eyesight wasn't good enough to let him be a pilot, but he was a navigator. And so he flew FB-111s. And we got to go inside an FB-111. And I was so excited by it. It was obviously the greatest plane in the world because my dad flew them. And I remember getting to look inside one of them and just being awestruck by the whole experience. It was really cool. So there you go. 66. And 66 is from, it's got to be Kyle, right? No, it's Stan. Go Stan. Stan says, what's the last household repair that you personally did? Well, what a great question there. Really funny stuff. Okay, there we go. My Audacity, my recording software just suddenly froze. And it's done that before, and I knew it would just, yeah, see, it keeps doing it over and over. I knew it would eventually come back, but it panicked me. I actually just a couple hours ago replaced the shower faucet, well, the bath faucet, tub faucet, in my bathroom. So there you go. I bought the thing for it. I bought a replacement faucet a while back, and I just couldn't find my pipe wrench anywhere. And so today we were downstairs carving Noah's car for the Pinewood Derby, and as I'm putting the saw away, I'm like, well, there's my pipe wrench. Holy crap. So yeah, I got up and twisted that sucker off and put on a new faucet. It was nothing major, but you know, it is a home repair, so. 05, back at the top is, it's from Stan again. Look at the man take over. Stan says, if you had to be a martyr for a cause, what would the cause be? I said, no, serious. Oh, I'm sorry. Uncomfortable topics. Yeah. If I had to be a martyr for a cause. Oh, man. Look, I know I'm willing to die for my family. I'm willing to die for my wife and kids. I don't know what else I'm willing to die for. I mean, we're talking martyr here, right? So, you know, are you willing to be a martyr to the cause of freedom? And when I say freedom, I mean making sure that we are restoring my vision of democracy back to this country, that we're, you know, is that something that I'm willing to die for? Probably, but that's a tough question. I have no idea. I've never been in a position to test my resolve on what I'm willing to die for. I don't know what I'm willing to die for. I would prefer to not die at all, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, if I'm trading my life for the lives of others, then yeah, I'm probably going to do it. I mean, I can see myself doing that, but again, I don't know for a fact. Like I say, if it's not my wife and kids, I don't know for a fact what pushes me over the edge to become a martyr. I really have no idea. I think most people who talk about being willing to die for something haven't been put in that position to know what they're willing to die for. I mean, look, I know we have police officers, we have soldiers, we have lots of people in this country who actually routinely have risked their lives and intentionally put themselves in situations where they think death is a likely option for them, and they're doing it for hopefully what they think is a greater cause, protecting American rights and freedoms, protecting the public of their community. I mean, firefighters and these are people that risk their lives to potentially save the lives of others. That's what they're putting their lives on the line for. I respect that. I would hope that I would do the same thing. But, you know, I've never put myself in a position to test it. I'm not sure. 96 comes from... it's from Billy Bob. Sorry, I had to get all the way down to the bottom there. And Billy Bob says, how often do you brush? Or really? That's the question we're asking? In general, if I gotta be honest with you, It's generally only the once a day. Usually it's in the morning when I get up and I shower, and then I brush my teeth, and that's usually the one time a day. Although, depending on how I feel, sometimes I'll brush before I go to bed, but I'm not the greatest about that one. So he continues and says, "How long do you brush?" I brush a long time. When I do brush in the morning, it is usually a good 2 or 3 minutes minimum. I mean, I spend a while brushing my teeth. And then Billy Bob says, "Really?" "Yeah, no, really. Really, I do." "What about flossing?" "Oh, I floss every time I have to go to the dentist." So, in fact, I usually go, "Oh, shit, I've got a dentist appointment coming up. I should probably start flossing now." And then I'll floss for the week before I have to go to the dentist. Hopefully I remember a week ahead of time. And I'll floss for that week before I have to go to the dentist so that when I get to the dentist, it looks like I've been flossing regularly and I've been flossing long enough that my gums aren't just bleeding from touching them when the floss hits them. So, you know, so then it's, all right, maybe that's not the best oral hygiene regimen. Maybe. I should probably get better about that. But, you know, but I don't have many cavities, so. I do have my teeth are a little bit brittle from, years in, oh geez, during college and then right after college, years of drinking sugary soda and not taking good care of my teeth. And so even though I take better care of my teeth now, my teeth have gotten kind of weak enamel around the gum line and they break a little easier and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I'm not doing bad, I suppose. So. Excuse me, 22. 22 is all the way back up here where we keep the low numbers. 19, dickety 2. We had to say dickety because the Kaiser had stolen our word 20. I'm sorry. Never mind. This is from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Ron says, "A Christmas Carol is my favorite Christmas movie, and it is surely yours as well. So tell me which version." I'm guessing the Patrick Stewart version. I don't really care much for A Christmas Carol. I feel it's played out. My favorite version of Christmas Carol is Scrooged. I don't even know that I've seen the Patrick Stewart version. I don't watch new versions. I don't even know what versions of A Christmas Carol I've seen. I'm pretty sure I've seen A Muppet Christmas Carol. And... of course, I've seen Scrooged, and that's about it. My favorite Christmas movie used to be It's a Wonderful Life, but boy, that one's just not holding up for me anymore. I don't know if I have a favorite Christmas movie anymore. You know what? I'm tempted to just give in and allow Die Hard to be a Christmas movie just so I can say it's Die Hard. That would probably be my fastest way to go about it. All right, 61. 61 is from... There it is. It's from Stan again. All right, Stan. Stan says, "If you could be any logical tree structure, what kind of tree would you be?" Wow, that is thought-provoking, Stan. Oh, you have really put me on the spot here. It's a, what kind of tree would you be? No, I get it. I get it. That's really funny. But, now I have to come up with a real answer. I mean, I'm tempted to say just the classical straight up tree structure, just the typical branching lines coming down, splitting off into different, you know, like a family tree style diagram. But I'm also a big fan of radial trees. I like the radial trees. I like the ones that you see when you see, representations of branching languages, and especially, you know, stuff where it's single nodes have so many branches that you can't just really fit them into a straight up diagram going down. You kind of have to branch them out in all directions to fit in all the information. I like those better. They're a lot bushier. They're a lot, I don't know, they feel more textured and nuanced, more full of information. You know what I mean? I like those. I like crowded, bushy, radial, decision tree kind of things. You know? Not decision tree. Sorry. decision tree is. We were just going over that with Eli for his science test as they were going through decision trees for identifying different species within a family. And anyway, that's enough. But yeah, that's the one I'd take. 72. 72 is, I've lost my page. There it is. 72 is from Stan. My God, Stan, how many did you get in here, man? You are killing it today. All right, part one. God, I hope there's a part two in here. Oh, there is. Okay, good. Sometimes when I copy-paste these, I don't realize that I've just cut a question in half and put it into two separate cells. So, all right, part one. I was behind a car with a license plate, MTY-MIKE. And they're separated, so MTY space Mike. What do you think MTY stood for? I'm guessing meaty as... in that Mike was large or something. No, it Mighty. Obviously, it's Mighty Mike. Clearly, it's Mighty Mike. That's the only possible answer. And, in fact, I would call myself Mighty Mike while wearing a stylized T-shirt that looks like the old Mighty Mouse costume. That's Mighty Mike. Obviously, that's what we're doing. Part two. If you had a personalized license plate, what would it say? It would say Nerd Pride, obviously. 78 is from Kyle. All right. Kyle says, of all the transportation vehicles you've ridden in, which is your favorite? Ooh. So, look, airplanes are cool, but, hovercraft would be awesome, but I don't think I've ever been in a hovercraft. Plenty of cars and trucks and boats, cruise ship, not bad. Never ridden on any spacecraft, as nice as that would be. I've been in all sorts of backwoods, all-terrain sort of, I've been on four-wheelers and three-wheelers and the six-wheeler, the Argo, that goes, this was really an all-terrain vehicle because, the six-wheeled Argo, you'd go crawling that thing up, 45-degree slopes and, hopping over sand dunes and then just drive it down into the water and the thing just paddles right along, nifty as you please. But that thing was a rough ride and dirty and ugly and not as much fun as you'd think. Of all of the transportation vehicles I've ridden in, what's my favorite? I'm going to have to say, God, so tough. So tough. The two options. Oh, man. Oh, but see, Winnebago. Nice. But I've never actually ridden in a Winnebago while it's driving. Because I think it would be kind of cool to, here we go. Without me babbling any further. What I like is a mode of transportation that allows me some freedom to move around and do stuff and not be responsible for the driving. All right. So when we've been in a giant 15 passenger van and there's not that many of us, so we've got some room to spread out if we need to, lay a seat down, make some room back there. Kind of cool. A tour bus would be awesome for exactly this sort of thing. Oh my God.
Quick.
How does Harry Potter get down a hill?
By walking. J.K. Rowling.
God, that was terrible. Terrible. Oh. Thank you, Aiden. So again, the idea that I get room to move around and get to do my own thing, get out my computer, read a book, play some games, whatever, and I'm not responsible for the actual driving portion of this experience. Thus, cruise ship's kind of cool that way, but less convenient. I like the huge passenger jets that are almost empty. That's the best. When you've got a lot of room to really move out, spread around. You remember the trips we took back and forth to Japan? Times when we'd be on that plane and it was almost empty. And so you could take the 5-6 seats across the middle there and just have a whole row to yourself, lay them all down to make a bed. That was so nice. So I'm going to go with airplane. I'm going to go with nearly empty airplane, passenger jet. That's really going to be my vote. 65. 65 comes from... There it is. It's from Kaz. All right. Kaz says, ASMR on YouTube. Have you watched them, and what do you think of them? Hold on. Let me get Aiden out here. Okay, I've got my son Aiden out here now. Let me go back.
Once.
Kaz's question is, ASMR on YouTube. Have you watched them, and what do you think of them?
Let me just tell you that this video is going to be the sound of me rubbing a knife across my beard.
Is that what ASMR is? What does it stand for?
I don't know what it stands for, but it's pretty much satisfying sounds very close to the mic.
Oh, okay. All right, hold on. Let me look that up. Autonomous sensory meridian response. Sounds that feel good. Gentle whispering ASMR. Oh, this is awesome.
You should really watch some sometime. They're great.
I did not know what ASMR meant until this very moment, so no, I've never actually watched the videos. Don't know anything about it.
Dude, you need to watch ASMR.
All right, let me see. Have you watched them, and what do you think of them? To me, it sounds like some hippy-dippy new age idiocy, but you know, I don't know what it's supposed to be for.
That feel good.
Right. Look, if it's sounds that are just relaxing and pleasant, okay, I guess I have no problem with that. If there's anything more to the theory of ASMR that it's supposed to do anything for you, then it's probably going to start moving into, holistic new age kind of territory for
knowing
me.
Knowing the internet, it probably does something for someone.
Right. But the idea of having sounds that relax you, I have no problem with any of that. But no, I haven't watched any of them. But, you know, I might before next episode just so I can see what this is about. We'll see.
Do you need me anymore, or can I just go?
You can go. Seriously. Okay, look, you either get on the mic or you shut the hell up.
I was gaming with friends and you pulled me away.
Gaming? You know I don't approve of that. All right, you can go. All right, 68. 68 is from Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, thank you, Aiden.
Yeah.
All right. Mrs. Darks says, ooh, F. Mary Kill. David Tennant, Matt Smith, or Christopher Eccleston. Oh, that is so tough. Look, Christopher Eccleston is my first doctor, but he's also not my favorite. I guess I like David Tennant a lot. I mean, I really like David Tennant a lot. I mean, he's either going to be my F or my Mary, obviously. But see, here's where I'm limited, is Christopher Eccleston was my first doctor, and I like him as the doctor, but there's some annoying qualities to him, and he's a little weird, but, you know, he's a doctor. Now, David Tennant, I like David Tennant. He is my favorite so far, but again, my experience of doctors is all two of them, okay? Because here's the thing about Doctor Who, is as much as I like Doctor Who, it's fun, and I understand it's this integral part of nerd culture, it's also not motivating me enough to really get to watching all the episodes. It's the kind of thing where we started watching it as a family, and so we made a point of, we're only going to watch it when we're all together to watch it as a family. Well, that just got harder and harder, and then, you know, Jacob moved away, and it became impossible. And since Jacob left the house 4 years ago, we just haven't watched any more Doctor Who. And I understand that, okay, he's gone. We could pick it up and just watch it with just the ones of us who are here, or I could watch it just by myself when I need something to fill some time or whatever. And yet, I just never have. I haven't been motivated. So I don't really know Matt Smith other than to know what he looks like. All I've got to judge him on is pictures. And so, having said that, I'm going to kill Matt Smith just because I don't know him well enough. And once I've killed him off, I'm torn between the other two. either way, I'm gonna regret my choice either way. But I think I'm gonna take my Night of Passion with Eccleston and then marry David Tennant because I like him. I like him a lot as my doctor. I mean, they always say that your first doctor is your favorite, but I think David Tennant's my favorite doctor. I mean, of the two I have. So that's where I'm gonna go with it. But it's not perfect. Not ideal. 50. And 50 will be our last one here. Let's see. 50 is from... There we go. 50 is from Mrs. Darks again. Mrs. Darks says, how do you feel about car naps? Are they the best kind of nap? Or rude to your fellow passengers and the driver? Both? Look, I'm not a big fan of car naps because I don't find them very restful most of the time. I mean, look, if I'm tired enough to be sleeping in a car, then, you know, I really, really need it. But, in general, I don't find them restful enough, but sometimes you need it, especially on those long trips. And is it rude to your fellow passengers or driver? Well, no, because you're only going to take a car nap if it's with people that you know well enough that they understand you need to sleep. It's no big deal, you know? There was one time that I took car naps that I thought was rude. I was super tired, and I was going on a trip. It was a business-related thing, and one of my coworkers was going with me, and she was incredibly annoying anyway. She was just trust me that she was just not a pleasant person. And so I just made a point of letting her know beforehand that, wow, I'm going to need to sleep before we get anywhere, so I'm really sorry to do this to you, but... And then I slept the whole way. And I knew it was rude when I did it, but, A, I was super tired, and B, I really didn't want to have to spend an hour and a half talking to her. So, I get enough of that anyway. And, well, this was 20 years ago. I don't even know where she is now, but no, there's nothing rude about taking a nap. I mean, look, this is the deal that we have in the car when we're driving. I mean, I don't nap unless it's me and my wife. You know, and she'll nap if I'm driving, if she needs to. But it's always with the deal that, okay, look, if you need to get some sleep, get some sleep. It's no big deal. We'll put on some podcasts or some music or whatever it is we'd like to listen to. And then if we're getting tired, we wake you up. And then that way we've got someone to keep us company and keep us awake. There you go. That's all it takes. But no, I don't find them rude at all. But I sometimes they're necessary, but I don't find them very restful for what it's worth. All right, you know what? We're done. I was just about to ring it again, but we'll give R2 a rest, and we'll move on to GLaDOS, who is going to give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit, and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week didn't use any. All of the songs I do use are available on iTunes. You should check them out, buy them, enjoy them. Wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. This one, along with Angry Geeks Versus and Me Like Trivia. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, recommend it to your friends because, you know what, you're enjoying it, so spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Word of my mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions or topics for the Podomatic like you've been doing. You're awesome. Watch every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all that grueling research. My info... Mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go on out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I go out to Facebook, and I post up, hey guys, I am recording anybody who wants to join in, go ahead and post up. I will read it right here at the end of the podcast. And that's what we're doing. So, first up in Facebook, let's see. Sarah Beth says, give me some stress relief ideas that don't involve breathing exercises or yoga, because both of those give me panic attacks. Meditation really does work. I love meditation, and I wish I did more of it. But if you don't want that, then participate in something, a passive entertainment that is mindless. Watch some television that is not thought-provoking. All right, something easy and formulaic that may be something you've seen before. All right, something that you enjoy and you already know all the steps of, but let yourself get lost in it. Read a book that is not thought-provoking. Get something mindless, even if it's, something as dumb as pulp science fiction or romance novels or better yet, some pulp science fiction romance. Oh man, those are awesome. But something that you don't really have to think a whole lot about, but your mind is still engaged because, you've actually got to read the words. Just something that takes your mind off of stuff. That's really what it is. Or, video games that, some mindless phone games that, yes, you've got to be actively engaged in it, but it's not like it's challenging you. It's not like it's stressing you out. It's not like, but just stuff that takes your mind off of it. Something that just barely engages your brain. So you're not thinking about and worrying about whatever it is that's on your mind. But also isn't taxing in its own right. You know what I mean? So, I don't know if that helps or not, but that's the best I got. Then Sarah Beth says, how awesome is DM Darks? Oh God, he is so awesome. That guy is the greatest. DM Darks, for those of you who are new, is, my game master. He runs our Pathfinder game every 2 weeks, and he is spectacular. The amount of work that he puts into this game, for 3 straight years he's been doing this, and he is fantastic. He is really good at his job. But Sarah Beth, continues and says, oh no, he is so awesome that his academic decathlon team just won a ton of awards. Oh yeah, and he's a teacher, and he's a really awesome one. So, let's include that. So yeah, good job, man. Including small school state champ and 3rd overall in state. Man, that is spectacular. That's so cool. Nelly follows it up with, holy jackwagon! Oh, good use of jackwagon. Thank you guys so much for letting me witness your game. I always knew how awesome DM Darks was, but whoa, he is really damn awesome. I know! Nelly sat in on our last game because she wasn't familiar with Roll20, and she wanted to see the software we use. And it was so nice to have her there, because she's always fun to talk to, and she had a good experience with it, and she got to actually see some of the highlights of the software, got to watch us game for a little bit, and, for us it was, this is what we do every time. I mean, it's pretty normal, but it was nice to have someone along who could tell us that we're awesome. So that's cool. Nelly then also says, so from one of the last episodes, I gather that your food options at Gen Con have not been hella adventurous. We should rectify that. I'll make a list. Have you been to Scotty's? No. The Ram? No. Noodles and Company? Yes. Dick's Last Resort? No. Not sure how you feel about that one. Oh, I don't know anything about Dick's Last Resort other than from where we stayed at the La Quinta, we passed by Dick's Last Resort every day on our way to get to the con. So I know that it is a place that exists along the path that I normally walk. Other than that, I don't know anything. Yeah, look, I would be thrilled to get some more food options. I mean, that would be awesome. I would love to try some new stuff at least once or twice, every time we go. Just try different things. That would be really cool. And you, as the awesome guide you are, yeah, if you've got recommendations for it, I'm sure we will take them. That's awesome. That's it for my Facebook page. Let's head on over to my forums. My forums is how many people actually responded. Oh, I got a few. Wow. I got more than a few. That's awesome. All right. First one's from Stan. Stan says, so is Phoebe's butt fluffy? And then he qualifies and says, hey, she asked first. Phoebe's butt is Phoebe was used to be, what was her last name? Was it Lucy was her last name? No, it was L. That was the one I was thinking of because it's Phoebe. And then before that, she was L. And before that, She was Lucy, and before that, she was Green Chelonia. But anyway, Phoebe, I think, has been drinking a little bit tonight, and she posted up something about her dog's fluffy butt, and then was wondering if her own butt was fluffy. And having seen, I have not seen her actual butt, but I have seen her in person, with clothes on, obviously. Maybe that wasn't obvious to you, but yes, I've seen her before, and, in my estimation, I would say that her butt would not constitute, would not qualify as fluffy. But, you know, again, her husband could speak better to that than I could. So, Elia had posts next, and he says, "Hey, how's Bugbear doing?" "Oh, he's awesome. I love my cat. My cat Bugbear is, he's a Russian blue. He's beautiful. He's smart. He's fun. He likes hanging around with people. He doesn't want to cuddle, but he wants to be near you all the time. And the thing I was observing about him just tonight is that, you know, he's a cat, and so he wants to present the appearance of being a ferocious jungle cat, because he will stalk stuff, and he will get into his pouncing position, and he'll, you know, he'll stare out over his, I mean, just, he wants to look like this ferocious jungle animal, you know, but then he does this cutesy stuff where he lays on his back and sleeps with one paw over his eyes to shade himself from the light, and he's just an adorable little fluffy kitten. So, you know, on the one hand, ferocious jungle cat. On the other hand, oh, he's so cute. So, you know, he's fun. Elia had then posts again to say, "Hey, have you talked about how we're, how we're in over our head again in Pathfinder? You should, because we're in over our head again in the Pathfinder game." Oh, God, we're in over our head. Oh, this is, yeah. We're invading the giant's lair encampment. It's not even really a lair. And we're in the tunnels underneath their main camp. And whatever it was we just hit, this giant that's down there, the thing is swinging a gigantic pickaxe and hits our first, hits Eli's character, in fact, Eli had, and smacks him with this giant pick and does 1d8 plus 25 damage. Now, if you've not played Pathfinder, I mean, where we're at, you know, if you've played Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder and that kind of stuff, where we're at 10th level means, you know, our highest, our sturdiest character, the one who is most capable of taking huge amounts of damage, maybe at this point has, you know, 80 hit points would be our top end. All right. And this guy is doing, on average, almost 30 points per hit. So, all right. We've come across big hitters before, but the real danger of that, and this is the part that I kept screaming over and over, is, yeah, it's a pick. He's swinging a giant pick, and if a pick gets a critical hit, it's times 4 damage, which means if he rolls a 20, a natural 20, and then confirms it, he is potentially doing somewhere around 110, 120 points of damage in a single shot. That's enough to kill any of us. We're in way over our head. And this is just some guy in the tunnels. And now he looks special. He looks like he's a unique dude, but, you know, he's like the guard to the entrance to where the big bad guy is, but this guy isn't even the big bad guy. That's the point I'm making. And the big bad guy's going to have some other backup with him. And there's got to be some spellcasters around here because we haven't seen any spellcasters yet. We are so going to die. I don't know what we should be doing differently, but, at this point, oh, we should listen to Dwin. Dwin is Phoebe's character, and Dwin, counseled very strenuously against going in and doing exactly what we're doing because we were all going to get killed. And we all told her that she was being silly, and now we're all going to get killed. We are so in over our heads here again. But you know what? It'll all work out. How? It's a mystery to me, but it will. So we'll make it work. It'll be fine. Yeah, okay. So maybe we lose a halfling. Whatever. Things will get by. It'll be better. All right. We'll come out on top in the end, and we'll be rich because of it. And, you know, we'll grieve a little bit over our lost halfling, but then I'll have my magic wings and it'll all be better. Cause that's seriously, losing your best friend, gaining a set of wings. That's pretty fair balance, right? I think so. All right. Eli had then says, hey, is Aiden with you? Well, he was, and now he's off. He's gaming with some friends of his. So, is he having a good time? Is he still giving you shit? Sometimes he should give you less shit, as you brought him into this world and provided for him for a very long time. I'm not saying that he owes you anything, but I'm kind of saying that he owes you something. Oh, well, kids today, they got no respect. No respect. Seriously. Aiden is pretty awesome. So, I'm not going to criticize him. And, you know, while he does flip me crap a lot while we're on here, that's the podcast dynamic. And I've always thought that that would be, I don't know. You see that dynamic in that when you have two people on the mic, and you see that dynamic a lot of one's kind of the asshole and kind of flips shit out there and kind of, and the other one plays the nice guy, the straight man, I get it. And it can be very entertaining, and it gives us roles to play and something to feed on. We do a little bit of that, but, you know, mostly he just wants to be funny. He just wants to be funny to entertain you guys. And I know he doesn't mean it. I know he doesn't mean most of it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're right. All right. Anyway, enough of that. Let's see. Oh, next one is Produce Farmer. Hey, Produce Farmer. Hi, Mike. Hi, Produce Farmer. The subject of cat cafes has come up a couple of times for me this week, and I'd like to ask you if you've ever partaken in the cat cafe or any other animal cafe experience. If so, how'd it go? And if not, would it be something you'd be into? No, that really does not sound pleasant to me. I mean, I get it, but, I'm not into hanging out in a cat cafe. I'm just not. I mean, I like my pets, but I don't want to go be surrounded by, well, although I suppose if I tried it, it probably wouldn't be bad. It wouldn't be horrible, but it does seem, I don't know. No, it just seems weird, and I'm uncomfortable with bringing animals into, well, okay, when you say cat cafe, I mean, we're talking a real cafe that welcomes animals in, because, you know, cats get up on the tables and they get up on the chairs and they, I assume a cat cafe would have all sorts of walkways and ledges and cat towers and things for them to play with, and they'd be all over the place. And that seems like a lot of cat hair. I mean, well, okay, probably not any more cat hair than I have in my own home already, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm with mixed feelings about it. I don't have any particular urge to go partake in one, but now that you've made me think about it, probably wouldn't mind it either. He ends by saying, hope your hunt for your beverages of choice has gone well this week. No, it hasn't. They're still not there, but I still look every time. And one of these days, I'm going to see my Monster Java Kona blend, and I'm going to buy like 6 of them, and I'm going to take them home and tell myself I'm going to ration them out, and then I'll wind up drinking them all in 3 days. But I'll tell myself I'll ration them out. That's all that matters. So, yeah, one day they'll come back to me. I'm sure they will. All right. And then the next one is from me, and it says, done. So we are all finished. So thank you guys for being here. There's no one else left in the room. They've all left me. So say goodnight, R2. Love you guys. I'll see you next week.